Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, coming to you live from east of the Appalachians. Our AccuWindow forecast today, about 61 degrees. Mars is bright and red overhead. The solar wind is holding steady at 365.5 kilometers per second. Today, the most active part of the sun is not visible from Earth. Sunspot complex 1052 and 1053 continues to spit coronal mass ejections into space from its location behind the sun's western limb. These far side eruptions pose no threat to our planet. There is a new sunspot forming, however, but it is not visible yet. We are preparing for solar cycle 24 to ramp up to heavy flare production this summer. We'll keep you posted. I wanted to let you know that the number of earthquakes and disasters have really been on the increase. Just to give you an idea, from 1863 to 1900, it's about a 38-year period, there were 12. From 1901 to 1938, also a 38-year period, there were 53. From 1939 to 1976, a 38-year period, there were 71. Now, from 1977 to approximately 2014, this includes some predictions, 144 to September of 2009, we predict greater than 180 in total. And this is not just from the measurement system. This is actually pretty accurate data recorded post-Civil War to the present day. The intensity of the activity, with the exception of the earthquake that happened in New Madrid that made the Mississippi River run backwards, in 1811 and 1812, with the exception of that, the intensity and frequency of the events has been on the increase. It is quite alarming, and it is expected to continue. There were 20 earthquakes in the world in the last 24 hours, with five of them over 5.0 and two of them over 6.0. The whole earth is still ringing like a bell after the record quake in Chile last week. Many of you don't know this, but the Earth moved 3 inches on its axis in one day. And our days are now 1.3 seconds shorter. That happened in one day. March 4th, just 3 days ago, a cruise ship, the Louis Majesty, had a rogue wave suddenly strike the ship, breaking the glass of portals, killing 2 people and wounding many others. Rogue waves have increased 500% in recent years. These are waves that travel barely subsonically under the sea and occasionally break the surface. They currently run parallel to the coasts, but if they begin to turn perpendicular to the shorelines, the tsunamis may be as high as 400 meters, traveling at 400 miles an hour. Melbourne, Australia, was bracing for more bad weather today after a beast of a storm ripped through Australia's second largest city, bringing with it hailstones the size of tennis balls. The mini cyclone, which smashed into the regional capital with winds of up to 100 kilometers per hour, that's about 62 miles an hour, was an event which had likely not been seen since early last century, Bureau of Meteorology forecaster Kevin Parkins said. The weather system that brought the damage to Melbourne is known in meteorological terms as the supercell thunderstorm, an organized beast of a storm that once it gets going tends to last more than your average thunderstorm, he said. The fierce storm, which flooded city streets, saw some 26 millimeters, that's about 1 inch, of rainfall on Melbourne within an hour Saturday, while other areas recorded up to 70 millimeters, that's about, just about 3 inches. In the city center, the National Gallery of Victoria suffered flooding, while the Docklands Stadium was among those buildings damaged during the storm, which washed out horse races. Bureau of Meteorology forecaster Wassel Drodowski said the hail that hit in one suburban area was up to 4 inches in diameter. Yeah, I'll bet the body shops were busy the following day. More strange weather out there, though. Even in the Baltic Sea, about 50 ships, including large ferries, carrying thousands of people. Now, I don't know if you've ever ridden on some of these ferries up in the Baltic. These are pretty much warm water areas, relatively speaking. The water's about 28 degrees, but salt water doesn't freeze until you get much colder than that. These ferries rip along at about 40 to 50 miles an hour. They're made to move people from city to city, not using the mountainous, curvy roads that are quite slow, but move 1,000 people at a time between two cities at about 50 miles an hour. These are not slow-moving boats. Some of them are like hydrofoils almost. These 50 ships are stuck in ice in the Baltic Sea, Swedish maritime authorities said. They got caught outside the archipelago, where there is moving ice. It's hard to navigate. Sweden has suffered an unusually harsh winter this year, with temperatures across the country almost continuously lying well below freezing since December. We have had the same thing in North America. At one time, every single state in the continental United States was covered in snow. First time in recorded history. Now, China spent $140 million manipulating the weather in 2009, but claimed it earned back 30 times that much in increased crop yields. China's weathermen seem happy to take credit for the good effects of cloud seeding, but when the China Daily reported last November that the government's weather control establishment was responsible for the second major snowstorm to hit the capital in less than 2 weeks, there was a deafening silence from the Weather Modification Center that comes under Zheng's administration. About 24 countries around the world practice weather manipulation, including the U.S., Russia, India, and China. And I might mention that the U.S., Russia, India, and China use HARP, high-frequency active auroral research projects. These are ionospheric heaters to move the ionosphere up into space, redirecting the jet stream and thus moving the giant river we know as the jet stream into more favorable climes to cause precipitation. My question tonight is, what effects do you think that weather modification has on the balance of water and energy in the world? And should we be playing with the weather using HARP? We'll have open phone lines to talk about this. The number is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Get those phones ready. Much high strangeness going on in the world today. Some of it's natural. We see natural disasters increasing all over the world, volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, superstorms. But how much of it is the meddling of mankind's technology? We welcome your phone calls, 415-762-1161, right here on X Squared Radio. HARP, for those of you that have seen some of the specials out there, if you go to xsquaredradio.com, we have a part two of a five-part series that aired on the History Channel late last year. This was a special called Weather Warfare. It was designed to show you how plausible it was to actually use energy forced into the ionosphere to move clouds. Now, you have heard from time to time, especially on these specials, History Channel and also True TV, first episode, Conspiracy Theories with Jesse Ventura, we duplicated the experiment. We wanted to show you how easy it was to manipulate a cloud. We actually created a cloud and moved it using HARP. And to say the least, it was quite dramatic to watch water vapor that's innocently formed using an ultrasonic nebulizer. Those of you that are familiar with these little mist fountains, you know, they have a little high frequency vibrator in them that makes a very cool fog. We use this to create a cloud inside of a plexiglass tube, and we have an enclosed cloud right there on camera, and then we stop producing the cloud, let it all settle and get stable, and it'll probably stay that way for, oh, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes if you left it alone. But in the bottom of the chamber, we mounted a miniature version of HARP, a sort of parabolic mesh antenna. And in the top, the receiver. And what we would do is just use about 100 watts of power. And within 3 or 4 seconds of turning this on, all of the vapor inside the cloud chamber jumps up into the top of the chamber, and the cloud, all the water molecules go out of the vapor state and immediately collapse. Now, this is just a small demonstration of what HARP can do. HARP obviously uses well over a billion watts, in some cases multiple billions of watts, in a giant phased array. A phased array is where antennas are stacked one on top of the other. One amplifies the other and amplifies the other, and you can manipulate the frequency slightly in harmonics to create tremendous effects over the carrier frequency. Now, the HARP that we use up in Alaska operates in about the 2-meter range. It's 144 megahertz. Over that can be laced ELF waves and ULF waves. ELF is extremely low frequencies, and ULF is ultra low frequencies, and these can get all the way down to, about 4 to 5 cycles per second. The Russians' version of this was often called the woodpecker, because as the signal was picked up and the HARP pulses were played over a speaker, it sounded a little like a woodpecker ticking away. These signals were sent out some to relay messages to submarines which were out at sea, and others other ways was to have effect on the human psyche. As you know, by the work of Dr. Nick Begich, mind control, mind manipulation, mental pattern upsets can be manipulated using HAARP. And this is something that violates human nature. It violates human sovereignty to use this. Now, we as a nation, as a military nation, as a militarized nation, justify it by saying, oh, this is merely non-lethal weaponry. We're not really hurting anybody. We're just making them a little upset. We're making them a little insane so that they will pack up their things and move out and thus not cause a problem to our troops. Anything, it seems, to reduce and mitigate the risk and risks to our troops is exactly justifiable in these kinds of expenditures. Small versions of HAARP pulses, sonic weapons, subsonic weapons, or should I say sub-aural, these are frequencies that are below 20 hertz, are regularly used in the battlefield. They're mounted on the back of trucks. They move them into position, throw a bunch of power behind them, broadcast the waves, and cause physiological effects on the area irradiated, and take down people sort of like weakening them mentally and physically so that they don't present a formidable challenge to our troops. Sort of like a peaceful crowd control methods, but nevertheless a violation of human rights. Although I must say it's not quite as violent a violation of human rights as accelerating a pellet to supersonic speeds and letting it rip through human flesh. I guess it's a little more humane than that. But what side effects have been found by the use of these technologies by Russia and China and India and the United States is that weather can be modified. And, you know, we have been wrestling with rumors and innuendos of global warming and pressures from various political factions, some making money and some jealous of others who are making money and just trying to make political hay. But global warming, climate change, has been something that had a lot of credence and gained a lot of political momentum in the last 20 years. Although I have to say that the disinformation crowd has done a very good job of leaking things like emails and discrediting various reports and things where data has been left out or where data has been obfuscated. However, don't be too quick to judge. Because although there is substantial evidence that global warming may be taking a hiatus right now, what we do see are changes in the heliosphere, changes that we have never seen before. Continuously low-speed solar winds, that is to say, our sun is not putting out the stream of wind that it normally does, 600, 700, even 800 kilometers per second. That being said, because of this low wind coming from the sun, the heliosphere is somewhat spineless compared to the galactic wind. And so now the galactic wind and high energy particles left over from supernova events millennia, millennia, millennia ago are now encroaching upon our heliosphere and headed our way. Now, the strange thing about this is that the history, the actual advent, the arrival of this, was foreseen, not by scientists, it seems, but by ancient civilizations who chose to encapsulate these messages and codexes in stone, in metal plates, and in hand-me-down legends, even through the Hopi Indians. The interesting thing that boggles the mind is that there is no possible way in that precessionary period, known as the Age of Pisces, there is no way in that particular phase that they would have had predecessor knowledge to be able to make that kind of extrapolation to the Age of Aquarius. No, you'd probably have to wait 26,000 years to the last age of Aquarius, till the time we were through this neighborhood before. Now, as it turns out, these 26,000-year cycles that the Earth's tilted axis draws through the zodiac, all 12 zones of it, it takes about 26,000 years. As it turns out, great cataclysms occur. There are minor ones that occur periodically, but the great cataclysms, the life-ending ones, the extinction events, as you will, occur every 104,000 years. That's four precessionary periods of 26,000 years. This 2012, this December 21st, 2012, the end of this precession, this 26,000-year cycle through the zodiac, is the fourth cycle. So we are double threat. First, it is the end of the precession, and second, it is the end of the 104,000-year cycle. So the question is, how did the Mayans know this when they created the calendar? How did they know this when Palenque made his tomb cover and outlined the cross in the galaxy known as the Rift in the Milky Way? How did he know about Jacob's ladder and the serpent bar? How did he have this special knowledge? Many people don't know this unless you have read the Arc of Millions of Years series, which was published by myself and my co-author. If you have read that, then you know that Palenque had six fingers and six toes, and he was close to 8 feet tall. This would make him, in that realm of the world, in the class of giants. And his son was also very tall, but not as tall as he was. So, and this six fingers and six toes is a mark left behind, a genetic mark left behind by the inbreeding or the crossbreeding of Nephilim with human women, leaving an offspring of fertile giants. These fertile giants, although physically very strong, and thus, you know, the biggest man in town, often was made the king, but they were often also very intelligent because of their increased brain capacities. Their brain capacity was about three times the mass of the average human. So the interesting thing is that they did have this knowledge, but it wasn't imaginary. It was handed down to them. It was taught to them. It was brought to them. They remembered it, and they taught it. Now, one has to wonder about this. When you have a king, and he says, okay, we're gonna build this city, we're going to build this giant calendar, and I've figured out all the math of it, and I want you to get started on it, and it might take two or three generations before we finish it, but it's going to be worth it. Somebody somewhere along the line might have spoken up and say, excuse me, why are we doing this? Because our people are hungry, we're getting pounded by tropical storms every fall. We really need an irrigation program, and urban sprawl is really bothering us here in Teotihuacan. We would like to see more social programs and things to take care of the people. I don't think we should be building these edifices because you haven't showed us where it's going to benefit our generation or our children or our grandchildren. What you're talking about is benefiting a society that isn't going to live for 1,500 years. Why are we doing this? Would we here in the United States build something, spend a significant amount of our gross national product, blatantly, openly, almost flauntingly use advanced engineering well beyond our abilities, maybe beyond the abilities of a society 1,500 years from now, to build an edifice, to build a message, to build some kind of reminder, some kind of wake-up call, for something that's going to occur 50 to 60 generations from now? Come on. Our society doesn't even care about our own grandchildren in the way we spend our money and layer taxes upon taxes. We are spending our children's money and our grandchildren's money without any regard for the future whatsoever. Why would mankind in the 5th century be any different than we are in the 21st century? I'm asking these questions, and I am asking you to help me provide the answers. Call in 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. The answer is that perhaps they had a higher calling. Perhaps they had a mission that they knew that they would participate in some 1,500 years in the future. Well, gee, what does that mean? How in the world would they know this? Well, one of two ways. They either knew that it was they who were going to reincarnate over and over and over again, and it was they who would be alive these days in the 21st century, and the edifice left behind would remind them what they were supposed to be doing, what they were supposed to be watching for. That means you and I were there. We're the ones that built those edifices. We're the ones that made that engineering happen to remind us what we are supposed to be looking at. Now, it might not be literal. Maybe it wasn't Brooks and Mark. Maybe it wasn't James and Brian. Maybe it wasn't Susie and Robin out there building this. Maybe it wasn't the great minds and engineers that exist today that also existed then. But I'll bet just some of us were. Because there's some activation going on. There are some people that visit these things that come away with not something like, gee, that's a great tourist attraction. I'd love to have a miniature of that on my bookshelves. No. They're coming away with, wait a minute now. These lines mean something else. These lines mean that we're gonna come across something magnificent. What is it that awakens us? What is it that activates us? What is it that raises our consciousness to the point where we say, you know something, I really should be paying attention to this. I really should be wondering what I should be doing with my life. What should I be concentrating on? Should I be concentrating on accumulating all the toys that I need, that I want, that I should make my 401k as rich as I can? Should I bank my money and invest in gold? Should I invest in land? Or should I be thinking about where the planet is in the universe and what I should be doing? That's what I'm concerned with. What is it that you should be thinking about? What engineering activation has been going on in you? The phone number tonight is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. As we look at the increase in natural disasters in the planet from 1863 to now 2010, we see that this trend and this increase in earthquakes and volcanoes and hurricanes and tsunamis and oceanic activities, we see high velocity particle clouds out in the universe that we are now approaching. We see the heliosphere being stretched out like a giant bullet in space, no longer round and high velocity like it was 30 or 40 years ago, or even 10 years ago. We are surprised as our spacecraft near the edge of the heliosphere. We realize that they reached there not only before we thought they should reach there, but the energy that was available outside the heliosphere was not what we expected. We expected that nice, calm, microwave hum present in the universe that reminds us of the Big Bang. You know, that quiet little, cool microwave level that we think is out there all around us and is evidence that the Big Bang happened and everything's universally cool out there. But that's not what we found. What we found were pockets of high-velocity particles grouped together, things that did not dissipate in space, things that should not be there. And these high-energy X-rays and gamma rays bunched together, and these high-energy particles are now coming into our heliosphere, headed for us as we near the rift in the Milky Way, just the way Palenque said it would happen when he was entombed, caused the lid of his tomb to be made, and when he was entombed in his shrine. So what's going on here? What is it that we should be paying attention to? Why is it so important that we pay attention to our effects on the planet? You know, one of the things that came up in a discussion a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the fact that we have a lot of matter and mass in the planet. And we plant our crops in the planet, and that protein and water and minerals and all those things that are in the ground end up going into the plants. The plants grow to maturity, make fruit. We eat the fruit that makes our body, and we become entangled with the planet. And there's a relationship there that we're going to discuss here in a little bit. First, we're going to talk to John from Vancouver Island. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooke.
How are you, sir?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you
great.
Brooks,
I really love your show.
Well, that's good. I hope there's not a big but coming.
No. Sure. I was thinking about what you were just saying. In regards to evolution, I've always considered the possibility that future development influences past development in a way like...
Yeah, sure, I got that. Can you be more specific?
Okay. All right. So when you're talking about the ancients trying to lay down signals for future civilizations like where we are now, What that implies is they had a very pessimistic outlook on the future. Because what I'm getting is they were thinking we would forget, crap would happen, so they have to lay this down in monuments and so forth. So they kind of knew that shit would happen.
Well, I think they probably did. My question was, how did they know stuff was going to happen? How did they know that it was going to happen the way that it happened? How did they predict that it was going to be a cosmological event? And why would they care about a civilization that's going to live 1,500 years in the future?
Yeah, well, you see, that's a very fascinating outlook. How do they know? Or like, what I was getting at was normally if I think that I might be calling to a future self, that future self knows more than I do and I can garner information. But the way you're setting it up is they're actually assuming that we know less in the future than what they knew. So that makes your question that much more fascinating.
Well, that's really a good point, and I that's kind of what I wanted to bring out. Maybe it's like the records that we found in Bolivia that indicate that there was a group which they call, in our language, what we call the Shining Ones, nine individuals that came to them and taught them things like husbandry and water purification and astronomy and engineering. And some of the things that they taught them to do with stone, we still can't duplicate. We don't have any idea how they manipulated the stones that they did. They cut them and linked them together the way that they did. But they're very open about it. They say, look, you know, we didn't figure this out on our own. There were teachers that came here and taught us. My question is, I guess, are the same teachers that are teaching us now, are they the same ones that taught them then, or are those individuals that encompass those mortal bodies in those days and then died of old age, have they reincarnated multiple times and are now alive now in modern bodies, and they're confused about what the purpose of life is, but when they visit, something draws them there, when they visit those edifices, something activates in them, and they come away with this marvelous feeling of purpose and understanding, which leads me to believe, and I've spoken to more than a dozen people that have, you know, innocently gone down on tours or were just drawn with a small group to go down and look at these things, and came away with life-changing revelations, almost ascension experiences that they had as they spent time looking at these things, running their hands over them, reading about them, you know, feeling the energy of the area. It's like something genetically awakened in them.
Well, you know, this is new for me, so it'll take time to assimilate. I find it fascinating. When you were talking about that, I'm thinking, the impression I got was back then they kind of knew that there's going to be a long battle where part of the battle is erasing memory.
Wow.
You know, there's an infiltration involved. So they actually knew a battle would be involved, and that was part of their motivation. That would certainly explain why they would put that energy into making a record. And they would also think, well, if the forces against evolution or against memory had a winning cycle, then that would add even much more motivation to putting the time and energy into making these mnemonic devices that we're looking at now.
Well, the interesting thing is that the record was once much more complete with the invasion, or shall I say the incursion of the conquistadors that went in there,
right,
and realized that a lot of these records have been kept on gold and ivory and different precious metals and precious jewelry-laden things. Had a more base value to them, melted down into links and shipped back to Spain, than they ever would as a historical and obviously pagan record. And so what we really have is only a remnant, just the stuff that they didn't understand, or it was too big for them to destroy or pack back to a museum for the king and queen. That's all we're left with, and it's still enough to activate us.
Right. Well, as soon as you said that, I'm thinking, if they kind of knew that kind of battle would occur with that kind of destruction in the future, then only the large monuments would be left to make a signal.
Right.
Yeah. So that would really explain the effort.
There are those in Mexico City that we interviewed a couple of years ago who were familiar with the Tzolk'in wheels, and they were familiar with Moctezuma and his knowledge of the future. There are some that believe that they knew that the conquistadors were going to come, about what time, what they would look like, and even why they would come. And they still welcomed them because it had been predicted. They didn't welcome
them on
the shore, but they welcomed anyway. And I guess
that really explains why they kind of caved in so easily against a small number of people.
Well, it's true. And, of course, when they first came, they weren't welcomed right away. But the occupants of Teotihuacan had an enemy, and the enemy was very numerous, and that was the Indians that lived in the wilderness. And so the conquistadors made friends with the Indians and teamed up with them, and that's where some of the warfare and some of the forced incursions came from. And then they discovered, unfortunately, bioweapons, and they hauled in wool blankets that were used to warm smallpox patients in Europe. They hauled them in by the bale and handed them out, and then wiped the Indians out as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a familiar story here as well in North America.
Right.
Okay. Well, I've really enjoyed this, and this is the first time I've called in, and I'm just really, I can't say how stimulated I am by listening to your thoughts and your guests and that kind of thing, and it really has become a very important part of my information network, if you want to put it that way.
Wow, that means a lot to me, John. I really, really appreciate that. It's why
I don't know
I do.
How you do it. Yeah, I don't know how you do it, but it's amazing. That's all I can tell you.
Well, it's still a mystery to me. So if you can figure out how I do it, you make sure to write me, so I'll keep doing it.
All right. Well, fantastic, and I've enjoyed this conversation, and We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. I appreciate it, John. Spread the word.
I will.
Thank you. Next week on X Squared Radio, I want to let you all know we have a very, very special guest coming on. His name is Rabbi Yossi, known by many, many thousands who visit his blog. And I want you not to miss next week's program. It's really something. I'm going to give you his website here in just a moment. If you go to xsquaredradio.com, anytime you want to know who's coming up and what's going on, all you have to do is go to xsquaredradio.com, excuse me, and click on the guest list button. It will light up in flame there, and then all you have to do is select the year. And if you go to Guests 2010 and just go down to March 14th, you will see Rabbi Yossi. His website is revealingthesoul.com, revealingthesoul.com. Now, Rabbi Yossi is an expert in the analysis and understanding of the Torah and creation that brings joy and warmth to those who immerse themselves in his teachings. I can tell you, if you will go there, every Friday, Rabbi Yossi puts up a new letter, and the letters are quite stimulating. In fact, stimulated me to contact him. One of my great friends, who I love dearly, is Christina in Israel, and she introduced me to Rabbi Yossi. And I can tell you that it has been worth it. Just the few conversations I've had with him on the phone, I'm writing pages of notes, and I'm reading his blogs, and I'm going to be very as prepared as I can be as a student of history to try to bring you the past, blend it with the present, and see what we can make out for the future. For example, one of the things that we're going to cover is going to be the creation story. We have talked about it in times past on this program from a scientific point of view, and now you're going to get the anthropological view through the original meaning, the true meaning of the translation of the Torah. And I think you'll find it fascinating. Now, one of the things that we've tried to do here on X Squared Radio is, and I have to tell you some news here in just a moment, but one of the things we try to do here is is approach things from a positive point of view, not a conspiracy theory point of view, and try to bring what would normally be unassociated information, cosmological data from space and geological data from the Earth and oceanographic data and meteorological data, and also political and maybe even national and scientific data, and bring it to you in such a way that you can make up your own mind what kind of pattern is going on, what kind of marvelous lessons are here to be learned. When you pull these things together and you start looking at them from a consolidated point of view, and we try to do it as scientifically as we can, but also entertaining, we try to have a sense of humor about it, what will happen is you'll realize that there's a difference here on this program and other, quote, paranormal internet talk radio programs. The difference has been, if you'll notice, most radio programs that you could name off the top of your head, let's say the top 20. Of the top 20, all but one of them is named after the host. Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Savage, Dr. Laura, used to be Beck, now he's on Fox News. All these people started out in radio, and they all branded themselves because they named their radio programs after themselves. Only one, and that's Coast to Coast AM, which was started by Art Bell many years ago and now main hosted by George Noory. It is not called the George Noory Show, but certainly everyone in this genre knows the name. And I've spoken in venues where he's introduced me and of course, gone to venues where he's been the MC and also a main speaker. So the difference is that all of these individuals, most of these individuals, came from broadcasting. They came from journalism. They weren't scientists first. They weren't engineers first. And then came onto the scene with a more analytical mind. They have staffs that put together their things for them, and certainly great minds like Rush, has his own stack of stuff that he goes through, but his staff does a tremendous amount of work putting these things together for him so that he can actually have a life, because he's on 15 hours a week. We're on 3 hours a week. That being said, there are syndicators out there. One of them is Matrix Media, and last week they contacted me, and they are interested in X Squared Radio and of course, me as the host. And one of the criticisms that came out of this analysis was that I was not private branded, that I was not calling it the Brooks Agnew Show. And I said, well, that's exactly the point of the program. That's why we call it X Squared Radio, because that function, X squared, that mathematical function, always results in a positive number. If you put a negative 1 in it and multiply it by itself, you get 1. If you put a negative 9 in there, you get a positive 81. However, there is one number that you could put into X squared that you would actually get a negative number, and that is the imaginary number I, which is the square root of negative 1. Obviously, the square of the square root of negative 1 is negative 1. So rather than put myself in the headline of the program, I just want the guest to tell their full story. We read their works. We come up with a series of 90 or 100 questions, which I ask to the best of my ability, almost like a senior book report in college or high school. And you get the benefit of it. So you get to hear great guests like Dr. Bruce Lipton and Edgar Mitchell and Ed Close and Andy Schwartz and Gary Schwartz, and you get to hear the rest of their analysis, the things that perhaps got a little too deep in the math, a little too deep in the physics for the average reader, but when spoken about and discussed in the right way, you get great amounts of information where you have these aha moments, and occasionally you write in at brooks@xsquaredradio.com. And you let me know about these moments, and it's very rewarding to me. Like John called from Vancouver Island earlier, first time he's ever called. And this is exactly how, over the last 5 years, we have built this program. Now, my question to you is, and I can take this as a survey by phone, or you can write me at bagnew@x2-radio.com, or you can write me at brooksagnew@yahoo.com, and let me know what you want me to do. Would you like to see X Squared Radio out over 750 radio stations across the country? Would you like to see the message syndicated and private branded, or would you like it to stay the little weekend program on Sunday evenings that you access with your headphones while you're at your workstation on Monday morning, or listen live on Sunday evening? The phone number here is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. In our first hour, we have talked about ancient messages left by the Maya for us. Did we leave them for ourselves? It's a great question. It's one that you can consider when you're doing your meditation. And if you haven't learned how to meditate, then perhaps we'll have Maureen St. Germain back on the program. I know she'd love to come and explain that to you again. I highly, highly recommend this year that you seek out training in meditation. And now you can go to Barnes & Noble Borders or Walden Books or B. Dalton Bookstore or Books A Million, and you can buy a book on meditation and you can give it a stab. I can tell you from my personal experience and from those of hundreds of people that I know that the most effective meditation out there right now is the Merkaba meditation developed by Drunvalo Melchizedek. You can take the course from the Flower of Life folks there with Drunvalo Melchizedek, or you can take it from one of his certified instructors. My favorite is Maureen St. Germain. And if you have a pen handy, you can just go to MaureenSt.Germain.com, MaureenSt.Germain.com. Her class prices are very reasonable. I promise you will not come away disappointed. You will come away very empowered with an ability to access the rotating energy fields in your own bodies, and be able to access higher knowledge for yourself. This is something that you should do for yourself. I believe in it, not as a religion, but certainly as a tool for bringing alive the energy in you and the access to the energy in you so that you can listen quietly to the universe. You're being too noisy. So just let it flow and listen. And it only takes a few minutes every other day. And believe me, great strides will be made in connecting with your sovereign self and leaving some of the trappings behind. Life is enough of a struggle with our own identities and our own weaknesses and our own falsehoods and withholds. Lord knows I have my own. I know I have my own, and I'm working on them the same as you are. And hopefully you are the beneficiary of that as I am. So in our next hour, I want to discuss, we've discussed high strangeness at the beginning of the hour, and then why the Maya may have left us the message, who were the Maya and why they left us this message. In the next hour, I want to talk about energy. We have really come through an amazing decade of awareness from 1990 to 2010. We really have seen this amazing change in the way we perceive energy. Just the last 20 years, we've made more strides in energy research, energy conservation, and the understanding of what we call a carbon footprint. But I'm sure you've been the victim of a lot of disinformation. You've been the victim of a lot of emotionalization and posturing and even manipulated, shall we say, by groups like the Society for Climate Change, who openly stated they were going to raise and spend $300 million to make people aware of global warming. And yet, when we tried to petition them for a small grant for a lab which would do research into biodiesel and the uses of the byproduct glycerin in things such as animal feed and dust control agents, obviously two very, very value-added products that could be made from the waste product from the biodiesel reaction, which is glycerin, they flat refused. Even though they were raising $300 million, they wouldn't even part with a few hundred thousand for someone who was actually doing something to fix the problem. So you've been the victim of that as well. So what I want to do is I want to talk about energy awareness, and what's in store for us in the next 5 years, 4 years, 3 years in the world of new energy. So we'll be back in about 7 minutes. Don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. Ooh. And welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We are coming to you live from east of the Appalachians, out in the plains of North Carolina. Our AccuWindow forecast, about 56 degrees, Mars bright and red overhead. You were listening to Lisa Gerard, Shadow Magnet. So in case you want to get a copy of that for yourself, just click on iTunes and go get it and listen to it. You'll definitely like it. This hour of X Squared Radio, I wanted to first of all let you know that the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy can be purchased for a package price. The shipping is very reasonable. All three books come autographed, and you get the first two volumes, Volume 1 and Volume 2, in audio version. So if you're not going to worry about it, because I read them for you, and that way you can keep those first two books nice and clean on the bookshelf with the spines facing outward and read Volume 3. I'm not through recording Volume 3 because I've been doing stuff. Not very good at packing more hours in the day than there are. One of the things that I want to do is make sure I get all those books in audio for you. I've got a fourth book coming out. I'm not going to give you the title yet, but I know you're going to like it. It's a much shorter book, about 205, 210 pages right in there. It is drawn from the depths of my soul, I can tell you that, and there's a lot of good stuff in it. It isn't an autobiography, and it isn't fiction. It's true. Like the other books, when you read it, hopefully you will be changed and change those around you, and then hand the book on or encourage someone else to buy it. And we'll get out in all the usual venues, so don't worry about not getting your hands on it. We don't have any commercial providers right now. I just found that over the years it's better if we just talk, you and me, and don't bring a lot of commercials into the deal. There are plenty of commercials to go around on other radio programs. The only way that we are able to keep the lights on and come to you each week is if you subscribe to the archives, and I take those monies and hand it on to the studio, and thus I can keep coming over the BBS radio network as I have since the year 2005. Now, BBS radio is definitely one of the top one or two internet radio providers in the world. Great hosts from all kinds of different venues come to you on the BBS radio network, channels 1 and channel 2. We're on channel 2 late night on Sunday evenings, and there are other many great friends like James Gilliland and others on BBS radio as well, and we're happy to be friends with them and happy to be associated with them. And I must tell you that my great producer, Don Newsom, does this as a labor of love. So if you want to help him keep his lights on as well, don't forget to go to bbsradio.com and either donate or sign up to the archives there as well. And it's $20 a year or something like that. It is for us and probably for him as well. You sign up for the archives, it helps us pay for the thousands of dollars worth of equipment that we must have in order to bring you this great sound, and we do it as a labor of love. None of us makes any money out of it. We do it because of the phone calls like we had earlier from John, and we receive from Mark in Albuquerque and Mark in Ohio, and all of the friends out there of X Squared Radio. It has become a great treasure of my life, and you know, although I'm still very active in the electric car business, Vision Motor Cars is plugging along. We've come through the first phase of our crash testing for our electric pickup truck. Those of you that want to know more about it, there is a link on the website for Sirius Energies, and you can see some of the vehicles. Unfortunately, the website visionmotorcars.com right now is password protected because we currently do not need any more sales. We have enough sales to more than make the company fly. So right now we're just trying to get the investment and government compliances out of the way so the company can move forward, hire people, and begin producing, mass producing, the first mass produced plug-in electric vehicle in the United States. Many other countries are way ahead of us in this respect, and able to produce their electric cars and deliver them to their population. If you've been to China lately, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You stand on a street corner and you will notice about 90 to 95% of the bikes coming across the street are electric powered. We're going to cover that right now, this hour. Energy, what are we doing about it? What does it mean to you in your life? What are the costs, both good and bad, in your life? We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. Well, I was going to do that, but I hit the wrong button, so here we go. Carbon, one of the most plentiful elements in the universe, emitted by stars along with helium and oxygen, nitrogen, one of the most plentiful elements on Earth, the requirement for organic compounds, carbon. And yet we talk about carbon footprints, how much carbon do we emit into our environment? Carbon dioxide is what we exhale. Too much of it's poisonous for us, but of course quite useful for plants because plants take carbon dioxide and sunlight and water and turn it into sugar. And certain minerals allow it to build cellulose, build fruit, and build the nutrition that we consume as organic material. And if we don't consume the plants directly, animals consume the plants directly, and then we consume the animals. So indirectly, we get the carbon in our bodies. But when we talk about carbon footprint, we're talking about the amount of carbon that we emit in excess or in other forms that cannot be used by botanical or biological forms out there. And how it affects our bodies and how it affects our environment. You know, if you change the pH, that's the inverse log of the hydrogen ion that's available in a liquid. If you change the pH just one-tenth of a number, one-tenth of a pH, you change the entire ecology of that liquid environment. And if we emit too much carbon, what happens is it gets in the atmosphere and it rains. It gets mixed with the rain and it falls to the ground as acid rain. Sulfur gets into it and forming sulfuric acids. And those acids fall on the ground and burn the crops and burn the trees. And areas where it's heavily limestone, like it is here in the south, the effects are quite minimal. But in areas where the soil is not so basic, not so alkali, it has devastating effects. It changes the ecology. Now, one of the things that we have been doing since the late 1800s is we have been gathering up concentrated carbon in the form of oil, coal. We've been shoveling it into furnaces and cylinders, and we've been burning it. Now, at first, I can see we're going to make a little hotter fire, and we're going to boil water, and the water is going to build pressure. You know, the water, when it turns into steam, is about 1,000 times its original volume. Well, that expansion of volume, especially at superheated conditions, is exactly what's needed to turn turbines or push pistons, and that's what made the factories of old with coal dust and coal soot and steam belching out over the Industrial Revolution. But nowadays, it's a much cleaner science, they say. Although there are many, many more cars on the road, oh, gee, we have catalytic converters, and we have fuel management systems, and we manage our stoichiometry, that's the ratio that by which we mix the chemicals, air and fuel, together. We manage the stoichiometry so much better, and we have a much more efficient burn, and we're able to get much more mileage and pollute much less with the advanced fuels that we have. But it's still very primitive. It's still a little like rubbing two sticks together to make fire. It's still a little like two tomato cans pulled tightly on the end of a string talking to one another compared to what we have available. So we're sitting here in our air-conditioned car, which is as comfortable as any living room might have been, with the stereophonic comfort and plus or minus 2-degree temperature management and carpet and leather and safety devices that will prevent us from slamming into the steering wheel or the side window, belts that hold us into the seat headrest to keep our head from snapping back in case of a rear collision, radial tires that hold the road, steel belts in the tires to prevent blowouts at high speeds and running over foreign objects. All of these things in a wonderful machine we call the automobile. Millions and millions and millions of them. In 2008, 16.5 million new cars sold in the United States. Almost that many were taken off the road and populating the junkyards of America crushed into scrap iron and shipped overseas for high dollar returns by the pound. I'm not saying that the automobile is bad. In fact, Americans, above all else, any other nation in the world, we are in love with our cars. We like to drive them, we like to race them, we like to park in them. We like to wax them, fill our garages with them, and they even become part of our love affair with life. We have a personal relationship with our car, which sometimes law enforcement interferes with, much to our chagrin. We ensure that lifestyle. We spend probably a good quarter of our income on transportation. So we're serious about it. But one of the things we pay little attention to is that power plant. While we're stuck in that traffic going 3 or 4 miles an hour, creeping 25 miles to work in an hour and a half, trying to do everything, talk on the phone, text, listen to music, listen to talk radio, to try to stem the onslaught of road rage. We don't realize that the power plant is chugging away under that hood at 650, 750, 850 RPMs. Every other revolution is a power stroke, combusting a small amount of gasoline with air, taking another round and shoving it out the exhaust pipe. During that operation, while we're idling along, we are not getting 33 miles to the gallon. I don't care how smart your car is. When you're stuck in traffic like that, you're getting no kind of mileage. That is to say, you're not getting 33 miles to the gallon. You'd be lucky to get 5 miles per gallon, as long as it takes to travel a mile. It could take 15 minutes to travel 1 mile at an idle, turning a compressor to compress Freon back into liquid form so that it can squeeze through an orifice and effuse back out into gaseous state, chilling the evaporator inside your air handling system of your car, which absorbs the heat out of your car, putting cool air past it and taking the heat out to the front of the car and dumping it out the front in the compressor in the form of liquid Freon. All of those activities going on at the expense of the environment. And there's a better way. Now we have electric vehicle technology. Now we're able to sit there in slow traffic, not burning energy, not wasting anything, insulated cabs with a few moments of air conditioning turning on, using up stored battery energy, and then the compressor turns off. And the fan keeps running and it just circulates the cool air around the car, runs it through the filter. Because the car is more insulated, it can be. Because now it's important to conserve that energy. With a gasoline-powered car, we don't worry about it. We don't care if your heat leaks out through the doors and the ceiling and the glass and the roof and the firewall and the rear panel behind the seat. We don't care about that because the compressor is capable of making far more cold air than you would ever use in the car. You don't believe me? Stick a thermometer in your vent sometime and look at that 39-degree air coming out of your dash. You don't need your vehicle 39 degrees, but that's how cold the air can get coming out of your dashboard. You'd be very comfortable at 65 degrees or 64 degrees on a hot day. But you don't have 64-degree air coming out of your dash. You have 38-degree air, 39-degree air, 40-degree air coming out of the dash. Why? Because you have to overcome all that heat load in your car. We can afford to be inefficient with it because the compressor is so much larger than what you need in the car and the evaporator unit is so much bigger than what you need in the car. But now there's a better way. Now we can insulate the cabs. Now we can use just a few kilowatts. And we can chill that car down and we can keep it cold and just recirculate the air, just keep it moving. And when you move the car forward, then you use a little energy. And when you're coasting, you're not using any. Or when you're tapping on the brakes, you're actually getting energy back. You're turning that potential energy, the kinetic energy of the vehicle, into electrical energy and pouring it back into the battery so that you can keep that charge up. So now, if you had, instead of 225,000 cars an hour on the highways going around Atlanta, instead of them being gas-powered, they could be electric-powered. And you know what would happen to the smog in the center of the city when it's surrounded by Interstate 285, six lanes and five lanes wide, with nothing but idling steel? Millions and millions of cylinders burning our planet and shoving it out the exhaust pipe into our lungs, into our eyes, and creating a form of carbon that no plant on the planet can metabolize. What if we took half or three quarters of that fleet and turned it into electric cars? The air would be clean. The cost to run those vehicles would be pennies, pennies a mile. You'd be running a car for $1 a day. $1 a day. Right now, you can't even buy half a gallon of gas for $1. And it's going up. Oil was $81 a barrel yesterday. $81 a barrel. In 19 more dollars a barrel, it's going to be at $100 a barrel. That means that your gasoline prices are going to go past $3, past $4, and they might even reach the Al Gore goal of $5 a gallon. Does that sound high to you? Does that sound high to you? Could you handle $5 a gallon gasoline? I think I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. I really would. And if you really want to know what we think and you want to add to it, please give us a call, 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Do you know what gasoline costs in the UK? If you do, give us a call. I can tell you what it costs in Israel. You're probably looking at about $7.60 US. $7.60 a gallon US. It's a good thing that country's only 140 kilometers long. And not very many people commute between cities. Oh, maybe Tel Aviv and Haifa, but you don't commute 140 kilometers a day. Maybe 20, maybe 30 or 40 kilometers a day in Jerusalem. Because fuel prices are too high. People just can't afford that in their lives. You know, I was giving National Public Radio reporters a ride in our electric car. She drove it around the racetrack two or three laps. She came back and she said, "I want one. I want this car right here." I said, "Why? Why do you want the car?" She said, "Because I drive about 60 miles a day. And right now," this is just shortly after 2008, "right now, gas prices are costing me so much money, I can't afford to do the things I want to do. I have to give up going to the movies on the weekend. I like to go to the movies. I have to give up buying ice cream. I like ice cream." And she said, "The worst thing about it is I'm mad all the time." I said, "Get out of here. Why would you be mad all the time?" She said, "Because I know there's no darn good reason for it. I feel like the government or the oil companies are setting a price with impunity, not driven by market prices, not driven by supply and demand. They're just setting a price so that they can gouge another profit out of the people. And I don't want to be put in that position again. I want an electric car. I want to be able to fill up my car on my own electric bill. Maybe $30 or $35 a month, and I want to see it on my electric bill. I don't want to have to turn my couch cushions upside down on a Wednesday afternoon to try to find enough gas money to make it to work Thursday and Friday to, before I get paid. I don't want to have to face that ever again. And I thought that was so profound that here was a national public radio reporter telling me that she wanted an electric car because she wanted real energy independence. She wanted to be able to charge her car up when she wanted, where she wanted, for pennies a day. She did not want to have to go to the oil companies to get her fuel. And I think she felt pretty good about not polluting. So we have a struggle going on in our country. Energy. Some call or write and say, oh, my goodness, Brooks, you know, the oil companies are never going to allow you to build those electric cars. They're going to stop you from doing it. Well, I have news for you. The oil companies are not the big energy providers in this country. Not by a long shot. There are three other providers that are even bigger than them. They are the hydroelectric, they are the natural gas, and they are the coal sources of energy to make electricity. And there's a fourth one, and that's nuclear. Not as big, and certainly not as popular, but natural gas, coal, and hydroelectric power make electricity. And guess what they make in the evening? That's right. They make a surplus of electricity. Electricity is so cheap on the West Coast that in Spokane and Moses Lake, Washington, they're actually giving electricity away for 3 cents a mil. 3 cents a mil. To attract large companies in, they're giving them a sweetheart deal on electricity. Why? Because the lakes are full. Because they've had record rain and they've had record snow and the lakes are full and the dams run 24 hours a day. You don't just shut off the flow of water in the evening when the demand for electricity drops. No, no, you've got to keep the water going over the dam. So what do they do with the extra electricity? Nothing. They send it out over the grid and nobody needs it. Now the natural gas has a little bit of an advantage because all I have to do is just slow down the turbine. They don't have to make as much steam. That's the kind of thing that could be changed almost in an hour's notice. Coal, it's a little bit different. You're spreading coal out on a moving chain and you get it burning at a certain rate with a certain ash bed. But to change that, to actually lower the amount of coal that you're doing, slowing down the water flow into your boiler so that you can keep the water level within certain parameters so it's not too hot and not too cold and you're making just about the right flow of steam for how much water you're consuming. It's hard to make those changes. You don't just take 1 hour and lower the amount that a boiler is putting out by reducing the amount of coal. It's not that easy. And at 5:30 in the morning when people start waking up, taking those hot showers, firing those hot water heaters up and turning lights on and air conditioning on and fans running and this and that and the other thing, the demand for electricity goes up. And when the sun comes up and the heat starts bearing down on our cities, our air conditioning units crank on and compressors pull megawatts of power off the web. Then the electric companies are happy. What they would really like the public to use more electricity at night. Now, in case you haven't noticed, if you owned an electric car, that happens to be exactly the time of day or night that you would charge up your car. Believe it or not, electric cars, electric vehicles in the garage of every American who commutes back and forth to work, especially if you commute less than 50 miles, I'd venture to say, there isn't 5% of our country that commutes more than 50 miles one way to work. Most of you, unless you lost the job that's close to your house and you had to take another job further away from your house and thus you have to travel a long way to work, I venture to say every single one of you buys a house that's pretty close to work. You probably had the work before you had the house. So it's just interesting how this lays out. We're going to discuss more right after we talk to Barry from Tucson. Welcome to the program.
Just wanted to pose a quick question regarding energy. Have you ever estimated what's lost in transmission lines as far as I squared R losses and radiated energy?
It's a lot. Most high tension lines are aluminum because they stretch a long distance. They're not copper. And aluminum isn't as efficient as copper at carrying electricity. So there are losses. And I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but those lines are sitting up on huge insulators on the top of those towers. Those insulators become damaged from the sun and from the stress and from wind pulling back and forth on those wires. And the insulators have to be replaced in order to keep transmission going strongly as well. There's a lot of
maintenance. Yeah, I would think well over 50% of the generated power is lost in that system with the transformers. And I mean, just listening to the hum is enough to, alone to tell you there's...
Oh, you're right. I mean, you have, in some cases, you have 500,000 volts. Most of it's 161,000 volts. And then it goes to a 38,000-volt step-down transformer. And then it goes down to 4160, and then 440, 220, and that's distributed to the houses, the little transformers that you see on top of the poles.
I just thought I'd throw that out. Also, you mentioned at the top of your show about syndicating yourself. I think that'd be a wonderful idea if you have the energy.
All right. One vote for syndication.
I mean,
Barry.
You're a real bright guy. There's no doubt about it. You would be successful.
Well, it's a question about moving from the realm of hobby to moving to the realm of, you know, an income stream. That's
and it's there for you. I would really check it out.
Well, all right. One vote for the good. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye bye. So, you know, that's one of the problems that we have. We're looking at electrical transmission. And if you're in the energy distribution business, you're managing the grid, as it were. And that's one of the things that you look at when you're looking at power management. You go out to these factories and you make sure that they keep at least 90% power correction factors. Let's see, I'll explain to you really quick power correction factors. When you're running three-phase power to a plant and you're running motors in particular, motors have a tendency to put a feedback back on the transmission line. Well, most cabinets have a set of capacitors in them that are called power factor capacitors, and they're designed to keep the transfer efficiency from the power line to your motor at 90% or above. Many places, those capacitors have burned out, or they have older style motors, and their power factor gets down to 70 or 60, which means it takes... If you're putting in 100% power, you're only getting 60% of the work out of it, and so it's very inefficient. The power companies, although they get to sell you more electricity, they don't like to do it that way, and they often will fine you or charge you a higher rate because you're not keeping your power factor above 90%. Believe me, factories that have hundreds of motors or even dozens of very large motors like 100 horsepower, 200 horsepower motors, they pay very close attention to power factors because they really want the efficient transfer of power, one for one, if they can get it. So above 90% is desirable. In any case, what we have here is a failure to communicate. We have the public who believes in the conspiracy theory rhetoric that the oil companies are the ones standing in the way of electric cars hitting the road. They may be, but they're in the minority, because those that produce the electricity in this country are very interested in electric cars. They would love to sell that electricity. And if our friendly National Public Radio reporter is representative of those who are out there waiting for electric cars, we believe that the energy independence, the desire of Americans to stay independent so that they're not controlled or manipulated. I don't know if you've watched fuel prices recently. You probably have, but you're so beaten up and so numb to it anymore, you don't pay any attention to it. Gas prices can fluctuate 75 cents to a dollar a gallon. Do you complain? Mildly you complain, but you realize that even Congress can't do anything about it. They'll just charge whatever they want to charge, and when they're hauled before Congress under charges of price gouging, they sit there with a straight face and say, well, you try cracking gasoline out of crude oil and see what it costs you. We have a lot of expenses in doing this, not the least of which is our bonus and your PAC money. So nothing is ever done about it. But when it comes to electricity, it's much more personal for people. They look at that electric bill, and believe me, if their electric bill went up 25% or 30%, you would see the city council halls filling up across America. It is not easy to change electric rates. It's really is an act of Congress to change those electric rates. The price of gasoline, everybody changes at the same time. There's really not much you can do. And in case you haven't noticed, national chains like Pilot, TNA, Flying J, 76, Shell, Mobil, Exxon, I hate to tell you this, but they're all within a few pennies of each other across the nation. If the price changes in Alabama, you'll see the ticker change within a matter of minutes in New Jersey. That's how tight communication they are. I have it on good authority that they'll get calls three times a day with updated fuel prices, not from their market. No. They get it from headquarters. Change your prices a dime today. We have race weekend coming up. We have Super Bowl coming up. We have Easter. We have Christmas. We have Thanksgiving. We have July 4th. We have the last vacation week of August. Jack, the price is 15 cents. We need a little bit more money in the coffers. And you'll see them go up like clockwork across the country. Collusion? Price fixing? Sure. But when it comes to electricity, you're not seeing that kind of activity. You don't see your electric bill going up and down several times a month, according to the whims and woes of corporate leadership. So what Americans want is they want to keep that love affair with their car, but they want the car to become clean. They want electric vehicles. And when they can reduce the cost of operation from $4,200 a year to $400 a year, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. In fact, it doesn't take a high school student to realize another $3,600 cash, tax-free, in your pocket every year. That's a $300 a month raise. That's a no-brainer. That is a no-brainer. It doesn't take a brain at all. Do some calculation. If you work for 40 hours a week and you work for an hourly wage, you work 4.3 weeks a month on average, 21 days. You do some calculations as to how much of a raise you would actually have to get in order to net. Now, I'm not talking about gross. I'm not talking about before taxes. I'm talking about after taxes, $300 a month. That's right. You're working about 170 hours a month. Let's just round it off and say 150 hours a month. $2 an hour raise. When's the last time you got a $2 an hour raise? Not. I could tell you if the minimum wage were raised by $2 an hour, those of you in the lower tier of your particular organization would be fired. Or you'd have to work a heck of a lot harder to produce that much more value for your employer. $2 an hour is a huge amount. And mind you, you'd probably have to get higher than that. Probably around $2.50 to $2.60 an hour. Because don't forget, Uncle Sam and Cousin Sam, that's the federal and the state governments, are going to take their slice of the pie, along with the stepchild, which is your local and county and city governments are going to take their slice as well. So in order to net $2 an hour, you're going to have to make a lot more than that. It doesn't happen, people. But if you drive an electric car, that's exactly what you get. You get to keep the money. You get to go to the movies. You get to buy a house. You get to put your kid through college. You get to put yourself through your master's program. You get to buy that boat. Ooh, wait a minute. Are we talking about stimulating the economy? That's right, we are. Drive an electric car and stimulate the economy. You can either save the $300 a month, which would be a smart idea if you could do it, or you can spend the $300 a month. And the $300 a month that you spend might save another's job. That is the way to stimulate America. So you get to keep your love affair with the car. In fact, you get a car that's a lot quicker off the line. It might not go 300 miles. In fact, it most definitely won't go 300 miles. But you don't go 300 miles either. You drive, on average, about 30 miles a day. And don't think for a moment that you haven't cut all those small trips out, like 3 trips to Lowe's on Saturday, or that trip over to the other city where they have the Best Buy or the Guitar Center. You can't afford to go there and shop. Why? Because it's going to take about $6 or $7 worth of gas, and you got to drive to work and back the next day. Well, now you can take those trips. Now you can go to the mall and the movie and the soccer game. Now you can go to the Rotary Club and the Bridge Club. You can play golf because you can afford it. Because you can fill up your vehicle any time you want. Just drive it home and plug it into the wall. You don't need anything special. Not to drive one of our vehicles. So what would happen? What would happen if we replaced 4%, 10% of the vehicles on the road, 20% of the vehicles on the road with electric instead of gasoline powered? I could tell you what the U.S. Post Office figured out. By replacing 18,000 minivans, which aren't too bad on gas, once you think about it, by replacing 18,000 minivans, guess how much they figured they could save by changing to electric? Yeah, $6 million a month. $6 million a month. How many cars can you buy for $72 million a year? You can buy a lot. It's a no-brainer, people. No-brainer. So, why don't we have electric cars out there? Very good question. But you didn't ask it. But you can, 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. 16.5 million new cars sold in 2008, somewhat less than that in 2009. Because we are, after all, in a depression. I know most of you don't realize that because you're hanging on to your job by your fingernails. Most of you at a job you hate. You don't feel the depression, but it's there. Most definitely. You want to know what it feels like? Drive past a Toyota lot. Look at the inventory on that lot. It will blow your mind. Months of cars sitting there on the lot. Months inventory. Sales in 2009 and 2010 are way down from where they were in 2008. But as far as you look, from Alaska all the way to the southern tip of Florida, from Maine all the way down to San Diego, guess what you won't find? That's right. Not one single solitary highway-ready electric vehicle for sale. Unless you want to call the Tesla Roadster. And if you can afford a $110,000 two-seater, more power to you. There are no electric vehicles in production. Why? Because none of them meet FMVSS standards, Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. None of them have been through the crash testing sequence. They've started some of them, But they're not done yet. We're not done yet. Phoenix isn't done yet. Fisker isn't done yet. Volt isn't done yet. Leaf isn't done yet. They're not ready. Why are they not ready? That's also a good question. You could ask it. 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Most of you out there, when we travel around to racetracks and trade shows and we show off our electric vehicles, they ask the question, gee, you know, how come the big boys haven't produced a car yet? Well, I've said it before on this program, and I want to tell you tonight, there's no win for them. There's no win for them. They already make the gasoline-powered vehicles. If they make an electric vehicle, the only thing they do is displace one of their own gasoline-powered vehicles. There's no win for them. They have to build two plants. They have to hire two employees. They have to have two logistics streams, two different sets of motors, two different sets of electrical technologies, one for gasoline-powered, one for electrical power, in order to make one sale. It makes no economic sense for them whatsoever. It has to come from a company that makes electric cars. So why aren't the electric car companies producing vehicles? Ah, I'm glad you asked that question. Because out of the $5 billion that the federal government says that it spent trying to get electric vehicles to come to market, none of it, not a penny, not a dime, not a nickel, has gone to electric vehicle manufacturers. And why do you think that is? You could have asked that question, 415-762-1161. I'm going to tell you why. The reason is because they haven't been embarrassed into doing it. You haven't called. You haven't written. You haven't contacted your congressman or your senator or your state senate or state representatives. You haven't written your own governor of your own state and said, wait a minute, I know there are cars out there that I can drive every single day and plug into my wall socket, and I want them put into production now. I'm John Q. Public, and it's my money that's at the headwaters of all the commerce in this country. It's my labor. It's John Q. Public working in dress shops, working in computer stores, making maps, drawing plans, pulling wrenches, welding, pouring concrete, nailing nails in. That's the people that are at the headwaters of all the money in this country. You have to get organized, and you have to write your congressman and write your senator and write your governor and say, wait a minute. What's going on here? We live in the 21st century, and we're still shoveling our planet into our gas tank and burning it. What's going on here? Help us out. Mark from Ohio, welcome to the program.
So, Dr. Agnew, why don't we have electric cars?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. It's because the public, although they are clamoring on the one end for electric cars, as are the car dealers out there, the government has not made it possible for electric car companies to produce them. I'm not talking about Ford, GM, Chrysler, Nissan. I'm not talking about those companies. I'm talking about the real electric car companies. I'm talking about companies like Phoenix and Fisker and Vision Motor Cars. I'm talking about companies like Miles and Koda. I'm talking about companies that really make electric vehicles. They didn't get any of the money. They got no grant money. And if you're going to sell batteries, which I can tell you the government has spent many hundreds of millions of dollars on battery research, the first thing you'd want is a flashlight to put the battery into. Well, that's the problem. If I was a battery company, I'd be sweating bullets right now because I'm spending $200 million to build an assembly line to make batteries, and there's no cars to put them in.
Do you think the problem that we're seeing here is related to the same problem that drives us into war, meaning greediness emotionalism, barbarism, addiction, and that kind of degenerate behavior?
Well, it could be. I mean, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist. I can tell you, here's how it works. Politicians don't like to be embarrassed. I mean, they'll shovel money wherever the lobbyists tell them to shovel it, but they don't like to be embarrassed. And right now, electric car companies like Zap and Vision and Fisker and Miles and Coda and Phoenix, they don't have lobbyists. They're not working together. They're working independently. They're small companies with 100 or 200 employees. They don't have anybody in Washington stepping up beside Senator Mitch McConnell or Congressman Kissel and saying, hey, you know, we have this electric car company, and what we really need are matching funds to go along with our investors' funds so that we can kick off and start manufacturing. We don't have lobbyists out there doing that. But what we do have, and it's starting to work, believe it or not, Mark, it really is we have potential customers. We have potential employees that want to go to work for our companies. And they're starting to write letters. They're starting to pick the phone up and call. And this is where the embarrassment factor comes in. When you have congressmen like Hal Rogers, who's famous for bringing the bacon home to Kentucky, his county in Kentucky, when he gets embarrassed because their office is getting 200 or 300 phone calls a month saying, hey, there's an electric car company over here in another county, by the way, that needs some help, they have to act. And that's what it takes. It takes involvement from John Q. Public. That's why we don't have electric cars in this country.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that. I ran across some information in the Billy Meyer material that explains, I think, a lot of the problems on this planet. And it actually, the entire matter is based on the manipulation of a single DNA gene that can be rectified. And it's a rather long story. But according to the Meyer material, and this goes back to Contact 251, which occurred in 1995, a Plajara named Patah was telling Billy about the history of the Earth human and where we came from, and basically told the story that we were genetically manipulated from a group called the Lyrians, which is, I guess, humanity started in the Lyrian star system, according to the Billy Meyer material, about 12 billion years ago. And we were genetically manipulated to be fighters, because there was one branch of Lyrians that had actually evolved so quickly that they had lost the ability to defend themselves. So what eventually became the Earth humans was this group who was genetically manipulated specifically for fighting, and we had our lifespan shortened to 100 years, and we had certain bad characteristics like barbarism and greediness, which could be a problem of what you're seeing today with the lack of electric car. But we came into this star system first to Mars, where we constructed cities and pyramids. And we also moved to the planet Melona, which I'm sure you've heard of, which was eventually destroyed by wars when we allowed parts of a large ocean to go into the magma chambers of a large volcano, which eventually blew up that planet, as well as causing big problems on Mars. So eventually we came here, but I just thought, wow, what a story. That explains so many of our problems, and it's the entire matter is based upon the manipulation of a single gene hundreds and thousands, probably millions of years ago. Maybe not directly related to electric cars, but certainly explains a lot of our problems on this planet, I think.
Well, I wonder if that gene can be fixed. I mean, can we put the fix in popcorn or Big Macs?
Well, according to the Meyer material, if our geneticists find it, it's a single DNA gene that can be rectified. And according to the Meyer material, this is where we get our story of original sin and the whole nine yards. And it goes back to this genetic manipulation, which causes not only the propensity towards war, but towards greediness. And I think in the case of electric cars, that could be what's really holding things up, is greediness, wouldn't you say?
Well, I really don't want to wait for genetic manipulation before we start selling electric cars. But, you know, if that's the case, then maybe we should start with baldness. That would raise the money.
That would be a good place to start, I agree.
Exactly. You know, my brother is a former chairman of physiology at Johns Hopkins, and I don't know, probably 20 years ago, he told me that they'd found the gene for hair growth in men and made the bold claim, "We shall comb again." But it didn't happen. So
it still hasn't happened yet, huh?
No. It still hasn't happened.
So think it's just the fact that there's not enough support in the public for electric cars? But it kind of sounds like the car manufacturers that we have today are kind of against it.
Well, it's not the venue for them. It just isn't. I mean, the electric cars are not going to come through the major car manufacturers. What they have done is they've built their shut-up cars. The shut-up cars are where the federal government puts out $400 million back in the year 2009. Actually, in February of 2009, they had a grant. And it was kind of small, a little less than $400 million. Those of us that were in the electric car business said, they'll never mess with that. That's not even lunch money for those guys. Let's apply for it. So we all applied for it. There were probably 30 electric car companies that applied for money. And none of us got any money. All the money went to the big four. So we're kind of frustrated with that. Like, hey, what's going on? I mean, $39 million to General Motors, that doesn't help them. What are they going to do with that? They're so huge. $39 million wouldn't take them through a week's worth of payroll for their engineers, let alone make a car. That wasn't the point, Mark. The point was GM got to scrape the cookies off the table. Zero electric car companies got money. None of them. DEFOA 028 was completely emasculated by the big four. Not because they wanted the money, but because they knew if they could keep it away from the electric car companies, they wouldn't have any competition. That's what it was all about.
So do you think capitalism, in a sense, is causing some of our problems?
Well, it is and it isn't. You know, it's more protectionism. Capitalism is what we're trying to do. We're trying to follow the American dream. We have great ideas. We have great performing vehicles. We have what vehicles we think hit a niche for which the public has already shown great demand. When we take our vehicles out to these shows, the public loves the cars. And they always ask three questions. How much does it cost? Where can I buy one, and who will maintain it? Those are the three questions they ask. And we have to say, well, we think we know what they'll cost. We have no idea where you can buy one, and we don't know who's going to maintain it.
Well, if the large car manufacturers were looking out for the best interest of everyone, instead of being so focused on profits, maybe they wouldn't have policies like that. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, it's possible. Now, if they were looking at profit only, I would say that's pure capitalism. But what they're looking at doing is laziness. When you're looking at profit, you're not looking at eliminating your competition. You're looking at doing the best job of selling and meeting the customer's needs. When you can say to yourself, well, I'm not really meeting the customer's needs, but I also don't have any competition, so I can get kind of lazy. I can overprice my product. I can manufacture it too long. I can not really worry about putting out these 99 mile per gallon motors that I know I'm capable of doing. Why? Because nobody's producing 99 mile per gallon motors. So if they're not, I'm not going to. We call this the PlayStation 5 syndrome. We already know PlayStation 5 is invented, tested, proven, and sitting on the R&D bench. But we still like PlayStation 3, and they're still selling them. And they're going to continue to do it until sales drop off. And then mysteriously, a few weeks before Christmas, PlayStation 4 will hit the stores.
But
that's what we're dealing
with. Isn't that a lack of integrity?
Absolutely, it's a lack of integrity. But until the public realizes that PlayStation 5 is sitting on the shelf and refuses to buy PlayStation 4, but demands the latest technology, then it will happen. And that's what we feel with our company. We are at least 2 years ahead of every other electric car manufacturer in the country. Why? Because we don't employ the same preclusion policies as the car makers. We didn't go to the automotive industry for our electric vehicle technology. We went to the electrical technology industries and got our electric vehicle technology. These are the very latest cutting-edge technologies that belong in the car, and that's the vehicle that we built.
Well, I think you guys are going to be very successful eventually because people are starting to wake up. And as always, it's been excellent speaking to you this evening, and wish you all the best, and I'll be listening off the air.
All right. I appreciate the call, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll be back. We're running a little bit long with hour number three, X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Don't go away.
Knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned-up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship fly in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver sea to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver sea to a new home in the sun.
The original song, After the Gold Rush, written by Neil Young, performed by the Alice Band a cappella. We really appreciate it. Just kind of fit the moment, so we threw it in there. We're glad you are part of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We are coming to you live from east of the Appalachians over the BBS Radio Network. one of the largest internet talk radio networks in the world, and we're happy to be in our fifth year with BBS Radio. Just wanted to take a little survey. We have one vote so far tonight. We have been approached by Matrix Media for syndication, and wanted to know if you thought it was a good idea. Since we're here for you, do you think it's a good idea that X Squared Radio go out over the real broadcast waves? Brooks Agnew expands from internet radio out into real radio, hitting the airwaves. Yes or no? Just give us a call, 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. We'll be back in 40 seconds with the final hour, March 7th, X Squared Radio. Next week on X Squared Radio, we have Rabbi Yossi coming on the program. We're going to talk about the ancient code of Torah, what it means to modern science, modern anthropology. Where did we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? What does the ancient record really say about the creation and destiny of the earth? Join us next week on X Squared Radio with Rabbi Yossi. I promise you're going to enjoy it. This guy is really, really good. And if you want to access his stuff, his website has a new letter every Friday. And all you have to do is go to xsquaredradio.com. And all you have to do is click on the guests. Hang on a second here. I'm multitasking and trying to talk to you at the same time. Don't you love internet radio? Yes, we do. Go to the guest list at xsquaredradio.com and then go to guests 2010. Real easy, because 2005 through 2010 is right there on the website. If you click on guests 2010, go to March 14th. It's just a little bit down the page. You will see the link for Rabbi Yossi. His website is revealingthesoul.com. Revealingthesoul.com. Known as Rabbi Yossi, he's Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak. He is known simply to his friends as Rabbi Yossi. Behind that simplicity lies a deep complexity of understanding and analysis of the Torah and creation that brings joy and warmth to those who immerse themselves in his teachings. Not going to be deep religiosity, I can tell you that. This is going to be a deep analysis of some very wonderful messages left for us in the ancient record. You can be part of it by joining us here live at xsquaredradio.com next week. If you're listening on the BBS Radio Network at Station 2, we definitely welcome you and appreciate you more than you know. We have about 40 minutes left in this hour. In the first hour, we covered earth changes, high strangeness in things like weather, earthquakes, volcanoes, different regions of space that we happen to be going through. In the second hour, we talked about energy and what it means to you, the real carbon footprint, what it means when you mash that little skinny pedal on the right-hand side. Actually, we still call it the gas pedal, but honestly, people, you haven't pressed the gas pedal in way over 20 years. You do press maybe what can be called the air pedal, but you're not pressing the gas pedal. We just kind of take it from old movies and hand it down that you're stepping on the gas. Nothing could be further from the truth. No longer any accelerator pumps in the vehicles, okay? You're just opening an air valve, allowing more air to move into the handler, which is automatically mixed sensed by a map sensor. That's a mass air sensor. And what that does then is just add, spray a little more fuel in there under high pressure through some injectors. Very efficient system. But you're not pressing on the gas, just a little skinny pedal. Now, in our vehicles, the little skinny pedal is really a controller. It changes the amount of electricity that goes into the motor, and the vehicle takes off like a scalded dog. Yes, you can tune the car to spank the Corvette next to you, or you can tune it to go a long, long way on a single charge. It's up to you. You have total control over the performance of your vehicle. In this hour, I would like to talk about human empowerment. Now, one of the things that we face each day with as we get up, this is going to be a little bit more esoteric section. And if you want to call in, I would really appreciate it. It's 415-762-1161. Love to hear from you, especially if you haven't called in before. But if you have called in before, we're old friends. Join us and share your ideas with us. One of the things that we realize now is the neural network known as the Internet sweeps the world and becomes more accessible to more and more people in more and more countries, tying soulmates spread apart by thousands, tens of thousands of kilometers, connecting them in a way in which they would never, ever have been connected in decades past. Several things are happening. Of course, communication is improving and national relations because, you know, obviously if two people can talk, then two communities can talk, and if two communities can talk, then two states can talk, and if two states can talk, two nations can talk. And pretty soon the two nations will call a war and nobody's going to show up because we're all talking to one another. Okay? This is the way we want to face the world of the future. And before we get to the future, let's talk to Diane from Michigan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you tonight?
I am doing so good. I'm glad you called.
Oh, good. Listen, I'm calling in regards to the syndication. I think it's a great idea. However, as long as the fine print doesn't read that you're going to be censored in what you air.
Yeah, that would have to be in the fine print. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it'd be great to get out the paranormal and the things that you discuss and power and energy and electric cars and all of that. However, if it goes syndicated, I think a lot of times it's definitely controlled.
It might be. You know, I've sat down with George a few times, you know, face-to-face in various green rooms where we've spoken in the same venue, and I've asked him that question, you know. George, you know, you've been part of the what we call the establishment media for a long, long time. Started out as a broadcaster and was brought on as a guest host to Coast to Coast behind Art Bell. And over the years, he's a great, smooth voice and his wonderful demeanor on the radio. He's a great, great guy. He's a great, responsible, and I think a great, if not a leader, he's certainly a great player in the paranormal talk radio world. And I've asked him, George, have you ever gotten a phone call from anyone who has said, look, don't talk about this subject. You've got to keep it within these parameters. And he said, really, absolutely not. And he said, each night when I sit down in front of the radio, I have this kind of minute or two of really important inner reflection, and in which I realize that I have 20 million people out there listening to the way that I run this radio program, the things that I say on the radio, and the subjects that we cover. I have to say, at least in my opinion, they cover a little too much conspiracy and a little too much ghost stories. I wish they would stick more with the real paranormal stuff. But that's the way the radio program has grown over the years, a little more away from the way Art Bell originally built it, and it's become more entertainment. I mean, come on, what's hotter than ghost stories right now? Not much. But we just chose
well,
not
I
to...
I agree with that. I think that George Norrie is a wonderful host. I think he has a great demeanor about him. But I've also watched guests throughout the years on George Norrie since he's been there come and disappear as a result of... and no reason why. But I've watched him, and, you know, I've called on these certain guests and that really were out on the edge, more so than, especially when it comes into the, spacecraft and, you know, when you get into what they call UFOs. And he'll cover that, but I watch him be very careful in how he covers that. He, in fact, you know, it's, you know, there's another big talk show host on there too that really gets into more of the MUFON and more, which I believe is more controlled. I can tell by my own experiences, but nevertheless, I still say, you know, he might not be controlled that way, but he is, you know, if there's going to be something, I think, in a discussion forum, that might be a little bit too much on the cutting edge. You just see.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, there is kind of a Hoaglandish censure about the way that some of the major programs approach it, and frankly, you know, we have an open call to anyone like that, anyone that has UFO technology, any kind of evidence, sightings, pictures, testimony, contactees, ships, sightings, any of that stuff, they're totally welcome here. We'll cover it to the nth degree. And you know, somewhat, you know, I'm kind of capable of holding my own as far as asking the questions and finding out if it's real or not. And if it is real, maybe getting to the bottom of it, you know, right here on this program. But we don't get very many, to tell you the truth. We seek them out. We have several publicists that send us books. But honestly, when you go to find their websites and try to find out more about them and try to make contact with them, they keep themselves pretty hidden. They do. They just keep themselves, you know, out of.
Well, there are many though that are still out on other programs and other programming. Give you an example, like James Gilliland. You know,
oh, yeah, you
know,
James on here all the time. We're great friends with James.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can't wait to go this July. I was there in 2008 where I met you and, you know, a lot of the great guest speakers that were there. But
that was
nevertheless,
an awesome year.
Pardon?
That was an awesome year. 2009, you know, when I got up to speak, I asked how many people were new, how many people had never been to James Gilliland's ESETI Earth Transformation Conference before. Diane, I got to tell you, I was really shocked. I thought, maybe a third of the people. Most of these are old hands. They've been here a lot. About 75 or 80% of the people raised their hands. The whole crowd was new. It was really amazing.
Yeah, I think that's great. I would have been there last year myself, but the other things came up, but I definitely will be there this year. And nevertheless, going back to George Norrie and Coast to Coast, I really think he should have, and I've called him on that, on James back on the program, but so far it hasn't panned out. But anyways, I'm for the syndication. I think it's a great idea if we can get out more and more of the consciousness to the people and the truth of things that have been hidden for many, many, many years, and, you know, without being... cohorted or, you know, controlled. I think that's a great idea.
Well, that's great. All right, that's two votes. I've
got
okay,
it. Thanks. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right, so, 100% of callers polled tonight have said syndication is a good idea, so we may get back with the folks at Matrix Media and get that going. We'll put BBS Radio on the next level up if we can. They're already pretty great, you know, in the top 100,000 websites on the web. Come on. I mean, that's in the same neighborhood as Google. BBS Radio, greatest internet radio network in the world. And we're proud and humbled to be part of it. Don Newsom's love and passion. And we're glad to be part of his love and part of his focus of attention. So this hour, what remains, we have about 30 minutes left in the hour. If you want to call in, 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. X Squared Radio coming to you live east of the Appalachian Mountains. Mars bright and red overhead in the North Carolina sky. Human empowerment. Some amazing anthropological change is coming over planet Earth, and it's happening right before our eyes. And it's happening, I think, to the amazement of many and to the chagrin of some. Those that have sought to control the masses, entertain the masses, to enlist their loyalty either as listeners, customers, or followers of some kind or another might be a little chagrined that humans are now becoming empowered. They're realizing that as each individual, they are sovereign beings and thus responsible for their own life condition. This is a big shock. It was to me, and I'm still wrestling with it because, you know, we all have our own withholds. We all have things that we don't share with everyone. We share some things with some people and some things with other people, and we keep friends apart who are enemies with each other and don't share and are not open with all parties. It's the nature of our society, and we're trying to overcome it. We are. But it is difficult, and it is something that draws a blank and sort of like standing on the edge of a wall in the dark, trusting the person that's calling you forward to step off. It will be all right. We are empowered as individuals to have great effect on our planet, far and wide, simply by picking up a little piece of plastic and dialing 10 numbers. Your voice can go out and affect the universe forever. Because not only will your voice go live over the internet on X Squared Radio tonight, it will go into the archives, and hundreds of thousands of people over the next few years will listen to your voice say the very important things that you are about to say. You will affect the universe with everything you do or don't do. You are greatly empowered to have an effect on the universe. The question is, will you shirk that responsibility, that new empowerment, close your mouth and drift back into the wallpaper like so much paisley? Or will you speak out? Will you look up from the floor and into the eyes of that person across from you and be true? This is a very soul-shattering moment, my friends, when it's very difficult to look into the light when you've been sitting in the movie theater in the dark your whole life, watching the same movie over and over again because you're secure in every one of those 29 frames per second. You know what's going to happen. You know who's going to win. You know the music and you know the lines. And you know the conclusion, and you watch the movie over and over again because you like it, because nothing changes, because it's predictable and it's secure. But what if you sat down in a theater and all of a sudden one day there was a new movie and you were in it and the camera was on you? Well, that's called empowerment. What happens if they turn the lights on in a theater and say, "Everybody out. Get out into the real world"? Oh, you're going to walk out at first and you're going to squint like you're having an allergic reaction to the light. But you'll adapt pretty quickly and you'll realize that you've been in the darkness your whole life. Yes, it's been safe and secure. But the only way to tell that you're alive is that you're moving popcorn from the bucket into your mouth and you're breathing. And that's it. You remember the show Taxi, one of the most humorous episodes I ever saw. Reverend Jim was trying to advise Latka in how to pick up a beautiful woman in a bar. And so Jim gave Latka the advice, why don't you just go over and introduce yourself, talk to her. Actually, he didn't say it like that. He said, well, why don't you just go over and introduce yourself to her? So he goes over and he speaks to her and he comes back and is white all the way around, his eyes wide look, and says to Jim, she does not even know that I am alive. And Jim says, in the most baffled look as he stares off into wherever he stares off into, well, can't she tell by the way you breathe and move around and stuff? He didn't get it. He didn't understand. It's the connection. You're not just alive because you're respirating. You're not just alive because you're consuming food and generating a paycheck and paying a mortgage. You're alive when you're on purpose. You're alive when you are loving others. You know, there's a great misnomer, a great misconception, even in our Christian world, even in the world of religiosity. And the misconception is this. It does not matter how much you are loved by others. It only matters how you love them. Now, I know that sounds opposite of what you've been taught, but realize that even Jesus had enemies, and he certainly held no guile for any man. Maybe a station, maybe the Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes, Romans, blah, 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 certainly. But individuals? No. No, 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 no. Samaritans, Jews, Romans, Pharisees, he blessed them all, if the stories be told. And that is what you are empowered to do as well. You are empowered to reach out that way to everyone. Without violence, without guile, and with truth. Now, what is truth? Ha 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 ha. Great question. Great question. Truth is not just the absence of lies. Some would say truth is everything you have. Well, heck, do we go around giving everything we have all the time? No, we don't. Our society won't allow us to do that. Now, there are some who demand it, some who won't acknowledge that you're there unless you do that. But this is difficult. It is not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to learn. It's like stepping out of the movie theater into the light. You might have to cover your eyes for a little while. You might have to squint, and the water may run like rain from your face. But you'll get it. And I'll get it. The struggle's a little difficult. And the more knowledge you get, of course, the greater the challenge, I'm sure. Our phone number tonight, 415-762-1161. We have about 19 minutes left of March 7th, 2010. We are just a little over 2 years away from the date that ancient civilizations have looked to, if our calendars can be trusted, when a great shift is about to take place, so they say. That the planet Earth, yea, the very solar system, is going to be aligned with the rift in the Milky Way. Not like Michio Kaku says it does every 100 years with impunity. Nothing happens at all. This time it's different. This time we're at the end of a 26,000-year cycle. This time we're at the end of four 26,000-year cycles. 104,000 years. Now we're in a new place, in a new neighborhood with new energy, and our DNA is prickling with energy like the receiver getting just close enough to that distant radio program to almost hear a word or two. The static is changing pitch. It's not just the simple white noise that we're used to hearing, that background that we've become numb to, that hum, those birds tweeting, that little buzz in the background of our hearing. It's just buried beneath the noise of the real world. You know, it's not like stepping out in the wilderness in the snow, walking in the woods, where there's no sound at all, not the hum of electricity, not the whir of the air conditioner or the heater, not the running of your motor or the talking of your cell phone or the squawk of your Walkman or your iPod. Complete silence. When the real reception starts coming in, the whispers of the universe, those are the messages that start coming in just behind the hiss of space. And your DNA is beginning to pick it up. Words, bits, bytes, segments, resonations, and switches are beginning to activate in your DNA. Things you have never thought about before, ways of thinking, ways of seeing and hearing, in fact, ways of loving you never thought about before, are now coming to reality. You are almost on a daily basis. If you're meeting new people, some of you are in situations where you don't meet new people. You go to work, you come home, you're in your neighborhood, you bowl, you play bridge and bingo, and you don't meet new people. But some of you do meet new people. You're in sales. You're in a job where you work for the public or you see the public at your place. Or you're a contractor and you're meeting new companies and new customers all the time. You are meeting new people. And if you are, you're meeting people you already have known. You know this. It's like, hey, don't I know you from somewhere? Haven't I seen you somewhere before? Haven't I heard that voice before? Even if they're thousands of kilometers away and you speak to them on the phone, even if you're in a distant city on vacation in another country and you look up and say, hey, don't I know you from the old country? You're having those feelings now. You're meeting those kinds of people. You're making those kinds of connections. That's what we're doing as a planet. That's why you're here. All those things that you've been eating your whole life, the fish, the brownies, the smoothies, and mind you, the closer you can eat to your locale, the better. If you're eating cabbage from Southern California, and you live in Oklahoma, you're not eating the local earth. You see how important this is? Eat the earth that you're around, and you will begin resonating better with the earth. Eat local. Go to farmers' markets. Buy your squash and your zucchini and your tomatoes and your lettuce. Most of your beef comes locally unless you're buying it at a fast food place. But buy that stuff locally and start consuming it. And if you have your own garden, you might try what our friend with Anastasia translator said. Put the seeds in your mouth about 10 minutes before you plant them. The seeds will soak up your saliva and it will take in your DNA, and when the plant grows, it will use your DNA to match its nutrition to, and the plant will give you personally what you need from your garden. Try that and see what your kidney disease does. Try that and see what your diabetes does or your shingles. Try that and see what happens. We are entangled with our planet, electrochemically, energetically. In this dimension, we are entangled with our planet. We are entangled with one another, not only on an energy level, but on a DNA level. You know, there's not much DNA separating us, not race by race, not sex by sex, and not person by person. We are so close. In fact, the entire universe is folded up inside of us, not in a teleological way, in which it's going to unfold like some giant enzymatic pattern already made out for us in some engineering lab a billion light years away. No, no. It's unfolding before us because we have all the information inside of us, and it is us, individually us, that's turning the pages of that science book. We are letting out what we will let out. And it is our choices, and our judgment as to what we will be or won't be. When your mother used to say you could be anything you want to be, did you ever dream of being that waitress? Did you dream of being that auto mechanic or that heavy equipment mechanic? Did you dream of being that painter or that map maker or that AutoCAD technician? I think not. But a series of choices made by you led you to that place. That's why you're wearing a uniform. That's why you're wearing khaki pants and a light blue shirt today to work. That's why you know where your next paycheck is coming from. And that's why you know where it's not coming from. Because of your choices. You did it. No one did it to you. No one hurts you. No one makes you mad. And no one makes you jealous. You do. You have control over that. So, we are empowered as a race. We are empowered as a human race on a planet, a very rare and special planet, where water is liquid on the surface, and it flows like giant rivers, billions and billions of gallons every day, across the sky, around the world, drops where it will, watering the soil. Does it return as rain? No. It returns as life. And that's what we do with one another. And now on the earth, more than ever before in the history of this world, there are nearly 7 billion live sentient beings on this planet. And the orbs, don't forget the orbs, they're there. If you don't believe me, just check it out some night. Use a camera or don't use the camera. Use the flash on the camera, you'll see them with the naked eye. Use the camera and you'll begin to pick them up with the digital, and you'll see they're there. They're a life form too, maybe the first life form on this planet. We're all here. Like we've been invited to a giant party and we're waiting for the main attraction to take the stage. We've seen the warm-up. We've seen the sunrise. We've heard the waves crash. We've heard the call of the Canadian geese. We've heard the chirping of the cicadas in the summer nights of the south. We've heard the wind whisper the sand across the desert. We've heard the snow falling silently in the night. We've already seen the warm-up band. And now it's as though we're waiting for the main attraction. The earth is rumbling beneath our feet. The stars are passing before our eyes, over our heads, and our DNA is prickling like tiny radio antennas underneath our skin, and we're coming alive. We're here. We're in the audience, and this is an audience participation event. With whom? With what? With the earth itself. With the conglomeration of energy known as planet Earth. It is alive. It is alive and it is pulsing with energy. And you have been consuming it your whole life. And you're alive. And if you're still worrying about how much is in your 401k, you don't get it. If you're still thinking life will not be complete until you get that snowmobile, or get that motorhome, or get that timeshare, or take that vacation to Mexico or Sweden, if you still think life won't be complete until you win the lottery, you don't get it. It isn't how many things you can accumulate. That doesn't mean that you stop working. You know, in every society of 100 souls, 20 do the work and 80 do the consumption. You're not here to consume everything either. Until you figure that out, you haven't learned the real lesson of entanglement. But you will, because it's going to happen suddenly around you, like salt falling out of solution in a glass of water, like hydrogen or helium freezing solid. It doesn't all happen at once. It happens a few at a time, and then a few million, and a few billion, and a few trillion, and then bam, it all happens at one time. It's sort of like that supernova event where so much gravity comes into one spot that the electrons, once blinking in and out of existence happily over the proton, are pulled down onto the proton, and the electron and proton touch, neutralizing one another, plus one and plus minus becoming zero, also known as a neutron. And when it happens suddenly, it's called a supernova. And the energy output is such that it can consume whole solar systems, whole portions of galaxies. That's what's going to happen. Our energy, our entanglement with this planet, 7 billion of us, along with this planet, is going to coagulate. It's going to merge, and it's going to shift. And what it does to the planet is going to be something to behold. What it does to the human soul is going to be something of absolute amazement. Are you ready for the change? Really good question. We have about 4 minutes left. 415-762-1161. Don't forget, next week on X Squared Radio, we have Rabbi Yossi. This is one of the great programs of the year. And we're probably going to have him on as a regular guest, because we're going to be going into the Torah code. And what I want you to do is go to his website, revealingthesoul.com. Every Friday, he puts up a new letter. The letter has great pontifications and reflections upon the ancient text, which is really the basis upon which most modern languages and modern religious and even quasi-religious scientific viewpoints and interpretations are made. Rabbi Yossi has laid open the leather-bound scrolls and has revealed to us what's really written on the original skins, the original records. And once you see it, it's going to amaze you. It's a little like the joke, you know, of the monk dragging the reporter down into the catacombs of the ancient records and found crying because he discovered that the word was celebrate. What we're talking about here is the real meaning behind the ancient words. We're going to talk about the creation and destiny of the earth from a scientific standpoint, of course, but also from a linguistic standpoint. What was really said when the creation story was dictated the first time in written record? That is a really good question. And that's the question we're going to answer this next week. Don't miss it. X Squared Radio Live. By the way, thanks for your votes tonight. We asked you to consider whether X Squared Radio should syndicate. And I appreciate your input. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, and it's important to me what you think. If you didn't get a chance to call in, or you don't want to call in, you can always email me just do it at bagnew@x2-radio.com or simply brooksagnew@yahoo.com, and I'll get it. I appreciate your mail. I listen to everyone, and we will see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, peace, Earth Explorers.